This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
China is still expanding fast, maybe too fast. Many Hong Kong residents worry about a wave of new atomic reactors being built on the mainland. With our expert guest Michael Schneider, we've already reviewed some of the threats posed by different nuclear technologies that are growing up in China. Now, let's get a report on how this is seen in Hong Kong. Stuart Heaver is a journalist with the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong. His article in the Post magazine, January 10th, 2016, alerted me to this underreported nuclear danger. Stuart, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
My pleasure, Alex.
Does Hong Kong use nuclear power for electricity?
Yes, very much so. Hong Kong has been part of China's nuclear power scene since 1994 when the first nuclear power plant called Daya Bay opened. It was a French technology that was employed, and it now supplies around about 25% of Hong Kong's electricity needs. It has done, as I say, since 1994.
Are there other nuclear plants already operating relatively near to your city?
Yes, there are, and I think that's what has raised a lot of concern locally. Whilst people were, if not in favour of Daya Bay, they have perhaps at least got used to it since 1994, but the pace of change and the pace of growth in nuclear power plants and nuclear reactors in Guangdong province, which is the neighbouring Chinese province just next door to Hong Kong, has been quite astonishing. So that people now feel very uneasy, almost hemmed in or surrounded by a new generation of nuclear power plants, which are raising a lot of tricky questions amongst people and they're not getting the right answers.
How many reactors we're talking about in Guangdong province? Is it 5 or 10 or...
No, not at all. I mean, since Daya Bay was built in 94, which is one plant, two nuclear reactors, there's actually now three plants, six nuclear reactors on that same site, which a lot of people in Hong Kong weren't even aware of. Plus, there are another eight under construction, and there are another 16 being proposed or planned. So this is not a small number, and all of these are within 150 kilometers of the center of Hong Kong. And the other thing you have to be aware of if you're not a local of these parts is that Guangdong province is really dominated by the Pearl River Estuary, a major industrial belt with Guangzhou, the major city formerly known as Canton at the northern part of it. And this is a very urbanized, very industrial area with about a population of around about 120 million people. So this is not a remote rural location in upstate China. This is a major developed populous part of China where there are being built lots of nuclear power plants.
One of them being the Taishan nuclear power plant. It's using French technology, and the French company Areva just admitted there is a serious, very serious problem right at the core of the reactor for these things, the European pressurized reactors. Has this been made public in China?
No, not at all, Alex. And this has really focused everybody's concerns in this part of the world because Taishan 1 and 2 should be up and running and operating, and we only really know about the problems due to the nuclear regulator in France, not the nuclear regulator in China. And the concern is that there just isn't any transparency. Whilst the two similar nuclear power plants in Europe, in Flamanville in France and the one in Finland, have been exposed to press scrutiny and public interest, Taishan 1 and 2, which uses exactly the same technology, is subject to exactly the same very serious design faults and technical problems, isn't exposed to any transparency or scrutiny other than a very brief statement made to the Hong Kong stock market about delays to its opening for the benefit of their investors. And I think this is what's worrying people. It's not so much a pro or anti-nuclear discussion. It's, you know, what's going on. We're only 80 kilometers away. If something goes wrong here, this is going to affect us, and we have a right to know what's happening.
And China's also going to be the testing ground for the new Westinghouse AP1000. They're the so-called third-generation reactors. There's none of them actually working in the world at this point. It's almost like the government decided to try one or two of everything to see what works and what doesn't. But, of course, it's a terrible thing when you find out what doesn't.
Well, it is, and I think it's the combination of the pace of growth and the multiple unproven technologies that should be proven. I mean, the idea was, I think that Ariba's even got on its website at the moment that this is great news for China because this technology is proven in France and in Finland, and they've got so much experience they're actually going to knock 40 months off the project cycle. I mean, it's complete nonsense because neither of those two European stations are open. They're all subject to delays and overruns, and so the first ever EPR, as it's called, could be in Taishan, and the first Westinghouse AP1000, although that's delayed and over budget as well, I understand, the first of those will also be in China. So there's a lot of concern about that. The unproven technology, the lack of transparency, and the third thing that really worries people around here is this thing called culture of safety. You know, we have a lot of industrial accidents in mainland China. They're reported regularly in the newspaper I work for and other newspapers. And that doesn't give people a whole degree of confidence that this is the right place for unproven technology developing at a rapid pace.
But, you know, if I go out on the street where I live and want to talk to people about nuclear power, they don't want to talk about it. It's just so horrible. People want to look away. I wonder, has there been more discussion in Hong Kong after the 2011 and ongoing Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan?
I think it's probably similar here to other parts of the world, that there was a great deal of concern post-Fukushima in March 2011, and then people sort of went off the boil. This is a very busy commercial city. People are very concerned and active about their economic well-being as in other parts of the world. So it's not something that's constantly in the headlines, but it has been a thorny political issue in the past. I mean, there were a million signatures signed in Hong Kong objecting to Daya Bay opening in 1994, and I think a recent government survey showed that only about 35% of people had any confidence in the safety procedures for Daya Bay nuclear power plants at all. So it bubbles under the surface. There is a lot of concern here. There was a lot of ignorance, actually, about the rate of growth in Guangdong province, because actually nobody tells you anything. So so I think it's bubbling under the surface, and I think the Taishan 1 and 2 issue and the specific concerns about that have brought them to the surface again.
Who are some of the Chinese critics of this rush to nuclear power, and what are they saying?
Well, I think the critics are, if you like, it's the people you would expect to criticize. In Hong Kong, far more so than in mainland China, there's a healthy group of NGOs, the names you would sort of recognize, like Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, that have always been skeptical about nuclear power. But there are other more local lobby groups and advocacy groups. There's one called Pro Commons, led by a civil engineer called Albert Lai, who's been consistently vocal in his concerns about nuclear power and its maturity and his concerns about dealing with nuclear waste. And I think a lot of these groups are, again, focusing around the issue of untested technology and lack of transparency rather than purely focusing on, you know, we don't want nuclear per se, because this is actually beyond Hong Kong's control. If the mainland decides to build nuclear power plants to meet its climate change commitments and to meet its growing energy demands, there's not a lot Hong Kong can do about it, but we can at least request some more transparency and demand and expose that the technology that's being used is at least proven.
Are you aware of the debate about building nuclear reactors at sites inland in China using major rivers for cooling?
I'm less familiar with that because I work in southern China in Hong Kong, so and the research I did was very much focused on Guangdong province. But I am aware that it's considered to be far more controversial, and there is actually one inland plant in Guangdong province at a place called Huzhou, which, incredibly, is actually a location that is common for earthquakes to occur. I think one research website called Earthquake Track showed that there have been 30 earthquakes in the Huzhou area in the last 30 years. The last one was in September 2012. So even in this part of China, and China, as you know, is a huge country, there is a specific concern about inland plants if they are not in places that you have confidence are going to be immune from external natural threats.
We have the same problem in California, where reactors were built on earthquake zones, and a couple of those have closed, and there's one more to go. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Stuart Heaver, from the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong. You know, Stuart, reactors are closing in the West, and nuclear company stocks have crashed, really crashed. Why do you think China's going nuclear when the rest of the world is backing away from it?
I don't think that's any mystery, Alex. I think China feels under an enormous amount of pressure to get its climate change and its air pollution act together. I mean, I know those are two very different subjects that sometimes get mixed up, but they're both relevant in China because China is growing very, very rapidly. I mean, there is one, to give you an idea for those listeners in the West, I mean, there's one city that neighboring Hong Kong called Shenzhen. Shenzhen is a new town, and in 1980 it became a new special economic zone, and at that stage it was a cluster of hamlets. There was nothing in Shenzhen at all. Now it is a modern metropolis of 14 million people. That's double the size of Hong Kong and bigger than most cities in Europe. You know, the pace of change in China, the pace of growth is startling, and when you're here you see it on a daily basis. And all of those people, all of that growth, all of those factories, they need energy, they need electricity. It's got to come from somewhere, and you double against that the pressure to not be the world's major contributor of greenhouse gases. And only 12% of China's energy mix at the moment comes from non-fossil fuels, even though they're putting a lot of energy and investment into renewables as well as nuclear. So this is a big place for the rest of the world's nuclear salesmen to come knocking, because China's under big pressure to find alternatives to fossil fuels to power its growth, and the rest of the nuclear industry, as you quite rightly point out, isn't in great shape. So they're all getting on the plane from the US and from Europe, all bound for China to sell their latest goodies.
I think they're hoping it will rescue the industry. Well, if a nuclear accident happened, and I pray that it never does, is there any realistic way to evacuate the city?
That hardly bears thinking about. I mean, anybody that has visited Hong Kong knows that it's a very, very densely populated, high-rise, crowded place. I mean, it would be absolutely catastrophic. I mean, to be fair to the Hong Kong government, there is something called a Daya Bay contingency plan. I don't think many people in Hong Kong have heard of it or are aware of it, but there is an emergency evacuation plan. You can look at it on the website. It's pretty half-hearted, I think it'd be fair to say. I mean, the news updates haven't been touched since July 2014. I think the last practice run was shortly after Fukushima, when the public were more acutely concerned of the risks of nuclear power. So there is a contingency plan in place. It doesn't look particularly robust. I spoke to people that had attended the last drill and said it was very relaxed. People were standing around laughing, giggling, you know, smoking cigarettes. This wasn't a very serious professional drill. If there was any type of nuclear incident in Guangdong province, particularly if it was one of the six reactors in the Daya Bay site, to one which is run by a Hong Kong company, which I think on the whole people have a high degree of confidence in, the other four reactors not run by a Hong Kong company, and we have very little control of, if there was a problem there, it would be absolutely catastrophic, not just in Hong Kong, the 7.1 million people. Next door to Hong Kong, you've got Shenzhen, 14 million people, plus another cluster of major conurbations in between those two cities and adjacent to those two cities. You know, it would be an almighty disaster.
When the Chernobyl reactor blew up in the Ukraine, the government told no one. 4 days later, the Swedes discovered radiation in the air. Given the secrecy that we know in China, a reactor accident could happen without people knowing, at least for a little while. Is that a concern for people in Hong Kong as well?
I think it's a huge concern. At the moment, there is a voluntary protocol. Greenpeace actually wrote a letter to the Hong Kong government asking specifically what was happening with the Taishan plant and to outline what safeguards Hong Kong had, or Hong Kong government had, about developments, problems, safety issues, and indeed major emergencies with the new plants being constructed in Guangdong province. And they weren't very satisfied with the answer. It was pretty woolly, and there is a voluntary protocol which has been adopted for what are called the Lingao reactors, which are the non-Hong Kong-operated nuclear plants at Daya Bay, which is very close, less than 50 kilometers from the center of Hong Kong. And there is a voluntary protocol, so they will release notices saying this has happened or that has happened, but there's nothing in law, there's no regulation as such for any of the others. So, as you say, if there could be a minor incident, there'd be a huge temptation by the regulators in China, I'm sure, to hush it up or at least to play it down. There's no scrutiny from the media. I can't go as a journalist and just pop up in like a tribe, it'll get me very far, to one of these plants on the mainland and start asking questions and taking photographs of these plants. It's just not possible. You know, you can't, as a member of the public, go and start having a demonstration outside, or you can try, but you probably wouldn't dare. So it's a very different culture in terms of sharing information and transparency. And I think, as I say, that's one of the big issues that you put your finger on, one of the big issues that worries people in Hong Kong.
Mind you, to be fair, I don't want to pick on China because I can't go to a nuclear plant in North America and start taking pictures. I'll be arrested as a possible terrorist. There's no way that I can get any straight answers from the industry either. So things leak out here, but it's pretty tight around the world as far as that goes. So are there constructive actions that citizens or local governments could take to maybe reduce some of the big risks with this nuclear technology? Do you have any ideas on what should be done?
Well, actually, I don't. It's a big worry. And as you quite rightly say, the nuclear industry anywhere in the world isn't exactly open about what it's doing with its business. As a journalist, I've tried to approach companies like Areva. I've never yet had a reply to any email or to any phone call. The nuclear safety regulator in France was good enough to confirm that their boss had been for emergency bilateral talks in China last July. But apart from that, it's very difficult to find out what's going on, I agree with you, in all parts of the world. I think the subtle difference is that a commercial company in the West is open to some sort of press scrutiny. It has to publish its results, and it's also responsible to its shareholders and has to advise them of what's happening. And I think, in a way, that's our best hope, that a lot of the money for this investment was raised in Shanghai, but also on the Hong Kong stock market. This is, you know, private big business money run by and organized by people like Deutsche Bank, you know, all these big financial houses we all have heard of in the West. So they have to report and comply with those financial regulations. They're the same in China as if they would have to in New York or London. And I think that's a hope, that if those rules can be tightened up and go beyond purely financial reporting to environmental and safety reporting, we have a hope of getting better standards and better confidence in terms of transparency. But apart from that, all we can do is campaign. The citizen of Hong Kong doesn't have any political sway or any influence in mainland China's energy policy, and so we're pretty impotent.
Stuart, as we wrap up, is there anything I've missed that you would like to add?
Alex, I think the concern here in Hong Kong, that the combination of factors, you know, the pace of growth, this absence of what people call the culture of safety, the fact we get a lot of industrial accidents, a huge one in Tianjin where 173 people were killed, I think, last September in a huge series of explosions in the chemical storage depot. We've had a huge mudslide with 53 people missing in Shenzhen, the big city just neighboring Hong Kong. So there's a lot of concern about the culture of safety generally in industry in the mainland. And then you had the lack of transparency and the huge financial and political capital tied up in this industry, the huge amounts of investment and political handshaking, leaders of state signing the agreements. And it all adds up to a feeling of unease that, you know, we really don't want this to be a recipe for what would be an absolutely terrible disaster.
Well, and I think as we've seen in Japan, all it takes is one large accident and the whole industry can be shut down. And the financial ramifications for that on the Hong Kong stock market, but in the Chinese stock market, would be huge as well, not to mention the human costs. So from Hong Kong, we have been talking with Stuart Heaver. He's a journalist with the South China Morning Post. You can find a link to Stuart's excellent article on nuclear worries in Hong Kong in my Radio EcoShock blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.info. Thank you so much for helping us out on Radio EcoShock.
It's my pleasure, Alex. And very nice talking to you.
I'm Alex Smith reporting. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.